Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, April 27th, 2018. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, from the Benjamin Dixon Show, Benjamin Dixon, on the week that was and still is. Also on the program, ostensibly to give us a film recommendation, but undoubtedly won't happen. Straight from Sweden. Sweden. Judy Gold will join us. Just hot off a Swedish.
Why is she yelling?
Swedish tour. Also on the program today, teachers in Colorado and Arizona on strike. Not technically in Colorado, but pretty close. Is a national one on deck. And unbelievable footage of the leaders of North and South Korea as they look to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula. Meanwhile, Secretary of Defense Mattis defends the Iran deal. We'll see how if that holds up after Rouhani's.
What?
Department of Homeland Security plans a new assault on immigrant families because they haven't done so since earlier in the week. Bill Cosby found guilty of sexual assault.
And cussed out the prosecutor.
Is that right?
That is right.
Why does he have to go
Called
blue?
Called him an asshole?
Why does he have to go blue?
Yeah, I was like, wait a second.
That's the problem.
You should at the very least have your pants pulled up after you've been convicted of sexual assault.
Why did he have to go blue? And speaking of which, why did Paul Ryan fire the House chaplain?
I'm sure there was a good reason.
And speaking of which, why do we have a House chaplain? Steny Hoyer caught on tape some wild DCCC spring break action that we'll be talking about. All this and more on today's program, folks. We also have a magistrate who has been selected to review a material seized from Michael Cohen so that there is no question. You know, because usually the FBI has like a dirty team and a clean team that that reviews this stuff. But in this instance, they got a magistrate to make sure there was no hanky-panky. And of course, Donald Trump and Sean Hannity have basically said, like, we're two supposed clients that he names, and we're not clients of his. So it's like, how could there be privileged material there? Smart move, guys. Smooth move, X-Lax.
Barely did any work.
Back in the
barely
day.
Did any work.
Wait a second.
Also,
wait a
every
second.
Single
I changed my mind.
Ever had.
I changed my mind. I changed my mind. It's what did I say
indemnified.
Before? We've done... Okay. I didn't mean that.
You know, in your president, every conversation you have is attorney-client privilege. every single
with
one.
With everyone. Folks, audiobooks are a great sidekick for summer. And summer, it now feels like it's actually coming. The past 2 days have been spring-like in New York City. Audiobooks are great for summer activities like hiking, running, road tripping, going outside, sitting on the deck, sitting by the pool, going to the beach. trying to ignore your kid. And with the largest selection of audiobooks on the planet, Audible lets you fill your summer with more stories. I'll tell you one that I'm going to, I think this might be the first one that I, actually like listen to that's not political in ages. That the one about the Golden State Killer. Did you hear about this?
I didn't know that there was a book about it. I saw the headline.
Michelle McNamara, right, who was married to Patton Oswalt, passed away. She was a writer of crime stories. And she wrote this book, I'll Be Gone in the Dark. And in February, they released the audiobook. And apparently... apparently they have found the Golden State Killer who had killed people in the 70s and the 80s. I mean, it's a crazy story. Crazy. I mean, the story is crazy. And then the story that they found the guy, probably as a function of the book, is crazy. Now there's still big questions, et cetera, but, no one's quite clear on what put them onto this guy that's the suspect. So I don't know. It's intriguing. But that's a book that you can find on Audible. And as an Audible member, you get credit every month for any good audiobook, regardless of price. Unused credits roll over to the next month. If you didn't like your audiobook, you can exchange it, no questions asked. So it's like a, it's like you pay, but it's like becomes like a library. Plus, unlike a library, the books are yours to keep. You can go back and listen anytime you want, even if you cancel your membership. Better yet, you can switch seamlessly between devices, picking up exactly where you left off, whether it's on your phone, through your car, from a tablet, or at home, or on an Amazon Echo. You can start your 30-day trial, and your first audiobook is free. You go to audible.com/majority, or... you can text the word majority to 500-500 on your cell phone. That's Audible, audible.com/majority. Or text majority to the number 500-500. You can do it with audiobooks. All right, so... we had mentioned the story that Mattis had come out and basically said, well, I mean, contrary to what people are saying, there are means in which to assess compliance by the Iranians.
He said, it's working and it's working great. Or so I forgot the Kushner.
Yeah, one. something to that effect. And... you got to wonder if, I mean, Rouhani, I don't know the wisdom of this, frankly, particularly
well,
the timing.
He's got to keep his own hardliners. Like, there's some question of Iranian self-respect here that's going on.
Yes, indeed. And Trump is out there with Macron saying, like, I've made my decision, and he knows what it's about. We've had pillow talk about it. But I'm not going to say. I could stay with it. I may not. And Macron, who was trying to lobby Trump to not crash the deal, came out and said, maybe there are some problems with it. So maybe they're going to find some solution, it sounds like. But here is Rouhani. Lashing out at Trump, and man, it's too bad they didn't have him on stage during the Republican debates.
On weapons. On Wednesday, Iran's president questioned Trump's ability to even comprehend the terms of any agreement.
You don't have any background in politics. You don't have any background in law. You don't have any background on international treaties. How can a tradesman, a merchant, someone who builds towers for a living, make judgments about international affairs?
And while he's...
I mean, he could have gone further. You don't even pay your people.
He just is so amazing. He just roasted him perfectly.
Well, my buildings. I mean, you imagine, like, if they even let Trump hear that.
He's going to lose his mind.
I mean, John Bolton takes that transcript and runs into his office, right?
Oh, yeah.
On the other hand, as with the North Korean case, although he already had his little weird fixation with North Korea, but Trump responds well to negging.
That's right. That's true.
You know, I mean,
he's so strong.
Whoa, look at him. I thought he was just strong. A hippie with a beard.
I don't like the dress he wears, but he's pretty tough. He's a tough guy.
That was tough stuff.
It's tough, really tough. It was tough. He hit me hard. And I appreciated that. He really hit me hard. I mean, that's what happens.
He's a special guy. Can I take some dandruff off of your turban?
I will say this. I mean, on some level, like, that's what Macron did too, right? He faced him.
Absolutely.
And then all of a sudden it's like, and I will say this. So, and I don't want this to come off wrong, but, and John Benjamin will refute this because John Benjamin's a pathological liar. But John's friend, back during our bar mitzvah days, when we were like all 12 or 13, his friend was sort of bullying me because I was fat. Now, John would argue that you were the bully and this and that, but John's a liar. And so at one bar mitzvah, this guy, I'm in the bathroom at the temple, right, taking a leak. The guy comes in, or maybe we agreed to go to the bathroom and fight or whatever it was. And so we fought. We got into like a scuffle. And I didn't punch him in the face, but I got him a couple times in the gut. And after that, it was like I was his best friend.
Right.
It was super weird.
Right.
Super weird.
No, I think that that's actually
and there could be
normal.
Trump There's could just be of, like... Yeah. He gave it to me hard. I got to respect that. Okay, let's not attack Iran.
Now, Rouhani said, let's meet in the bathroom. He got a couple of gut checks in, and now we're friends.
That's right. And then we went out and had the Oneg Shabbat. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Ben Dixon will be here to look back on this week. We will play some of this footage from North and South Korea. Pretty amazing stuff. Amazing. All right, I'll be right back after this. I do not understand what it is. I don't know. But for the holes, check for calls. Blink your eyes. We are back, Sam Seder, on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the program Benjamin Dixon, the host of the Benjamin Dixon Show. Ben, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks so much for having me again, Sam.
So this is a pretty big deal. I mean, you know, we're talking about over a half a century here, and... Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea, and Moon Jae-in, the elected leader of South Korea. I don't want to imply that Kim Jong-un was not elected, but I think there's some questions about that election. And so they met at the demilitarized zone. I guess this happened yesterday, right? Or
right.
Overnight. And this is, they are basically looking to end the, there haven't been active hostilities, but to end the Korean War, which is basically 65 years after, more or less, of when the actual fighting ended. Let's play this. I'm going to narrate it because there's no audio, but it really is stunning. Basically, Kim Jong-un and his entourage walk to the demilitarized zone. He is the first North Korean leader to step on South Korean soil. They walk to, and there's like a small wall, right? Like a six-inch mm-hmm. wall that denotes the line. And here they are. They're shaking hands. Moon Jae-in shakes, Un's hand, and they talk. And then he says, step over. He steps over the line, and there's the big deal right there. He's in South Korea in the DMZ on the line, and they take pictures for the North Korean press, and then they turn around. They take pictures for the South Korean press. And there's some audio here, too, right? Just keep the audio up. And they're taking pictures, and then Kim has a suggestion. You want to take a step over, and Moon Jae-in says, "Yeah, all right, let's do it." And so they walk across, and they're shaking hands in North Korea. You always wonder what they're saying to each other at that point, right? Like, you're a good guy. I know you're a good guy. I don't know now. Everything's in. But then. Kim Jong-un walks back into South Korea for the start of talks, ostensibly to demilitarize, or I should say, denuclearize the peninsula, and then off to the races. What do you think?
I mean, clearly it's a historic moment. I don't think it could be overplayed, and I don't want to understate the significance of it. The cessation of hostilities, like you said, there wasn't a hot war, but the war never technically ended. This is the first step for them. The next step is ostensibly to speak with the United States and China to talk about denuclearization, what that actually looks like. But the drastic shift in Kim Jong-un's policy or approach and tone it's drastic, but it seems to be very strategic. He achieved everything that he wanted to achieve in terms of getting a seat at the international table and being able to almost force himself into the international community. And so there was no need. He actually said as much. There was really no need for them to go further because I think he was at a negotiating position that he could get the maximum without taking us into some type of cataclysm. And so I think it was a very strategic move on his part, if things actually go the way they look like they're going. And that's always been the big question mark with North Korea. Are we actually going to go down the road towards peace? They've promised this in the past.
Yeah, I mean, all right. So let's assume for a moment. I mean, there's two scenarios, right? One is like Kim Jong-un meets with Trump, gets all the photo shoots he needs, nobody really ends up giving anything, and he walks away mm-hmm. from the talks and says, "No, not going to do it." And mm-hmm. I've given up nothing. But look, everybody has admitted I'm a guy you got to meet with. And, mm-hmm. I've just brandished my bona fides to any constituencies in North Korea that may be looking to overthrow me or think that there's certain weaknesses or, the general population. The other is that they actually say, like, okay, we're going to agree to stop our nuclear weapons program, or we're willing to just stop at one mm-hmm. weapon, let's say, and not develop a system for carrying it, or maybe we'll give up our weapons in exchange for X, Y, and Z. But mm-hmm. how is this tenable? I mean, it's hard for me to imagine scenario two, based upon what we've seen around the world. Now, maybe it's a very different calculation. Gaddafi gives up his weapons or his pursuit, and then, six years later, you're done. You're put into a hole. Right. What's to prevent that? Like, what what is the stasis? Like, if they do actually negotiate, what is the sort of like stasis look like? Because you can't all of a sudden say like, oh, we're not going to guard our border anymore, because
right.
North Korea doesn't seem like a very pleasant place to live. Mm-hmm. And if it opens up as a society at all, it's going to get very, very difficult to keep that bottled up. I mean,
right.
You know, the one of the things that sort of brought the wall down in Germany was like, you know,
the people.
Was concerts, though. Was right. Like, holy crap, what's going on? You know, like music. And, you know, I mean, I remember when I was like 20, I had visited East Germany. That you could go for a tour. And mm-hmm. I remember just coming back, like, all it would take would be, like, you fill up a bomber with American toilet paper and drop it on the population, and there'd be a revolution within, like, 6 months.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have to take in consideration the fact that Kim Jong-un is going to – every step he's making is to preserve his regime. There's really people float the idea of unification. There's really no possibility of a unified Korea there's no longer a North and South, because you have two distinct regimes, and that's just not a possibility. Kim Jong-un is doing everything to preserve his regime. And so that's the real question to ask. It's like, how does this move strengthen the Kim regime? And if it happens to strengthen his regime and the result is peace, then so be it. I mean, I think that's a win for the international community. But what strategy actually, how does this play out? I mean, there's so many different ways that this can go. And you're absolutely right. So they're going to clearly have to protect their borders, or else they're going to see a mass exodus. South Korea is going to some extent, is going to have to not only recognize, but legitimize and support the regime to prevent that from happening. So we really have to look at South Korea. What type of concessions are they going to give up, and what are they going to do to ensure that the regime is not threatened? Because the minute the regime, the Kim regime, is threatened, you can all bets are off. I mean, the tone will change as quickly as it changed in this instance.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Is like, how can Moon Jae-in, who he doesn't have the same, constraints in terms, or, you know, the same depth of determination to maintain his power, but how can he right. go to the South Korean people and say, okay, we have traded with them, they're getting rid of their nukes, and but we need to construct a 40-foot wall on the demilitarized zone. I mean, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like, or, you know, we also need to shut down any broadcasts, or mm-hmm. we need to we're shipping in, you know, maybe we ship in food and this and that, but it's all going to be distributed through Kim Jong-un's, a rolling food dispensary. I mean, whatever, like, that's what's going to have to happen. And it seems right. to me the South Koreans are going to have to sort of like suck it up and say, we're going to have to actually help keep this guy in power.
Right. But then there's the other side of it. Right. So you have a modernization process. Think about the elites from North Korea. The elites would absolutely love the opportunity to modernize North Korea and all the business opportunities that would be created from the South. I mean, there are people who will seize on that from a very neoliberal perspective to jump in there and to bring industry, whatever they could, to actually modernize North Korea, but also profit off that modernization process. I think the elites are really what are going to drive this, and to the extent that it can bolster the regime, still, I think, is the bottom line. So at the base of every negotiation, how does this protect the Kim regime? We just have to see how it plays out. But I think there's some opportunities to do this without putting up the 40-foot wall, without having an open society. And I think they may be going down the path of modernizing the North more so than everyone escaping the North.
Mm. And so is this, do we have Donald Trump to thank for this? If this works, I mean, it's just like his existence as an energy force, brings everyone else together. This is like, this is like me and Bill Kristol sitting on a set at MSNBC, and we come together, all because of Donald Trump? I mean, is this, does Trump deserve credit?
Trump deserves credit in so much as he doesn't mess this up. I don't know what rating the show is. So long as he doesn't mess this up, then sure, credit him for not messing it up. But you can't you can't belittle the contributions of President Moon Jae-in, the candlelight revolution over the last year, the hundreds of thousands of South Koreans who protested and led to the impeachment of the right wing government there, and then the subsequent election of a far more liberal government that actually sought, to the behest of the United States, better relations with the North. So, I mean, the United States, Donald Trump literally was making the situation as bad as it possibly could be. So there should be, hopefully the good people in Oslo have better thinking capacity than some people who are suggesting that Trump deserves the Nobel Prize, because there should be no Nobel Prize in this for him. It should, if anyone, go to the candlelight revolution and President Moon Jae-in. And maybe if Kim Jong-un actually goes through with this. I mean, it's way too soon to discuss that end of the bargain, but he would deserve it before Donald Trump.
Yes, but this is my plan from the beginning. All right. Well, I mean, it's going to be fascinating to see what goes forward and to watch Donald Trump. Trump is already now tweeted out, I guess, today, right? An end to the Korean War to end.
Sam, I'll give him this. He does know how to turn on a dime, and he knows how to seize on the opportunity of looking good. And in this case, it's the same thing as President Moon Jae-in giving Donald Trump credit. It's because we know that if you stroke Donald Trump's ego, you can get what you want, and he won't, you know, push his big red button like he was talking about last year. So I'll give him credit for turning on a dime and being willing to seize on this opportunity, because him making this about him is actually beneficial to peace.
There you go. Benjamin Dixon praising Donald Trump. We will clip that, and we will do a whole segment.
That's the end of my career.
We're going to do a whole segment on it on YouTube. All right. Let's turn our attention to some more sort of, I guess, domestic politics. It's interesting. The Intercept ran a piece, I guess, now, maybe a month or two ago, about how the DCCC was intervening in primary elections, and doing so with really no great success, and for candidates who were also corporatist. And there was another piece, part of a research by Theda Scoble and Lena Putnam, I think it was, who touched on the same dynamic. They, from their perspective, it was less ideological. It was just establishment people coming in and being jerks to sort of newly activated activists in on the ground in I think it was in Pennsylvania and maybe in, I think, Georgia. But there's audio that has now come out of Steny Hoyer meeting with Colorado 6th Democratic candidate Levi Tilleman. And Tilleman recorded this. He is the progressive candidate running in Colorado 6th District. He is running against a corporate lawyer. Well, here is the tape of the two of them. It's pretty fascinating. Steny Hoyer is basically just explaining, I guess it's some type of bar or some function, like, look, dude, we're not gonna support you. You got a couple of opportunities here, and this is, and we should keep in mind here. Let's listen to the tape, and then we'll talk about it.
In Colorado's 6th District, one of the most competitive seats in the country, the DCCC moved in early to select Jason Crow, a corporate lawyer, as the party candidate, pushing resources, endorsements, and money to Crow while elbowing out progressive Democratic competitors. The Democratic Party often denies that they play favorites. What follows is a meeting between Congressman Steny Hoyer, the number two Democrat in the House, and Levi Tilleman, a progressive running for the nomination for the Colorado seat.
Now, let me just hold on for 1 second. You remind people about Steny Hoyer. He is the number two Democrat in the House. And he basically built his career. He's in he's from Maryland. He gets a huge amount of corporate money. I mean, a huge amount of corporate money. In fact, for years, I've been talking about a story that somebody basically said, this goes back 10 years at least, when he was, I think, the whip. Steny Hoyer, because he gets so much money in his district from corporations, he has the freedom of going around the country and raising mm-hmm. money for other candidates and for other primary contenders. And this is the way that he built his power.
Right.
He's doing personal favors and he's helping the careers and building the political strength of different people around the country. And it was in the context of like how do progressive candidates and how do progressive legislators build their own base of support. And the problem is like they don't take corporate money. So to raise money for themselves is a huge job. And there's just not the hours in the day to go out and raise right. money for these other people. So that gives you a sense of like how Steny Hoyer became number two. He's his politics are as odious as they get in the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm. Lima, obviously I want to talk to you about this congressional race.
Absolutely, that's what I expected.
So they recorded by Tilleman, and this is months of pressure from the DCCC.
You would like me to get out of the race.
And you keep saying I would like you to get out. And of course that's correct.
Yeah. I know you're fundraising for Crow.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm for Crow because a judgment was made very early on. And it just made the decision.
So your position is a decision was made, you know, very early on before voters had a say. That's fine because that's the DCCC knows better than the voters of the 6th Congressional District, and we should line up behind that candidate.
That's certainly the consequence of our decision. There are two things I'd like you to consider. One may be easier than the other. The first would be, if you stay in the race,
mm-hmm.
and frankly, I would hope you would not. I'll get to that. But if you stay in the race, it is not useful to the objective to tear down growth.
Mm-hmm.
Crow's clearly the favorite.
Pause it. I want to make sure that everybody hears what he's saying. There's basically, Steny Hoyer says to Tilleman, there's two scenarios. One is you stay in the race. I hope you don't. But if you do, don't tear Crow down. Good.
Win just means he's the favorite.
I hear you.
That doesn't mean it's right. Just means
no. No, I hear you.
Right. I don't know Crow well, but I think he's a decent.
So before we go any further on that, Crow is the favorite, in no small part, Congressman Hoyer, because the DCCC not only put its finger on the scale, but started jumping on the scale very early on. And I'm born and raised a Democrat. I mean, it's undemocratic to have a small elite select someone and then try to rig the primary against the other people running. And that is basically what's been happening.
I hear you, and I disagree.
But you were part of that process.
Absolutely.
As well. You said
absolutely.
Yes, yeah.
I've been at this a long time.
Yeah.
When I said you need to get in strong, hard, and early, you disagree with me. You know, obviously, that's your choice.
And you guys are shoveling money at him.
I'm going to continue.
You're going to continue to do it?
We are going to continue to do it. And the reason why we're going to do it is because a decision was made to focus. It was clear that was our policy and our hope that we could early on try to come to an agreement on a candidate that we thought could win the judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And to give that candidate all the help we could give them so that we would have a unified effort going into a general election.
Which means, effectively, Congressman Hoyer, I'm running a campaign against Crow and against you and against the DCCC because you guys are on Crow's side.
Yeah. You know, frankly, that happens in life all the time.
So he basically says, we made a decision to get in hard and early. There was an agreement that Crow was the best candidate to win the general election. And yeah, we did it. And it comes in, that happens in life all the time. Ben Dixon, your reaction.
First, Steny Hoyer. Steny Hoyer is not the sharpest tool in the kit. He has a history of making really dumb statements, and I think this is clearly a dumb statement for someone who should be keeping this type of thing. I mean, this is, you don't just go out and tell everybody, or at least at any this candidate that you're fighting against him. Like, this is news. He didn't calculate in his head that this would be news, even if it wasn't recorded, right? But Steny Hoyer, remember back in 2006, he had to apologize to Michael Steele, the black former chairman of he was lieutenant governor of Maryland at the time, for calling him slavish. I remember going to an event with Steny Hoyer, and just every other word sounded like something that he was going to have to apologize for later. So to have this guy going around the country shows you how inept the Democrats actually can be, because he's a liability. He has been a liability for a long time. Now, on the substance of the issue, I mean, the Democrats, if they had a track record of winning, then maybe you could sit back and say, okay, they know what they're doing, but they don't win. So they don't know what they're doing. So this argument makes absolutely no sense whatsoever, notwithstanding the fact that it's clearly undemocratic, lowercase d.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing that I found a little bit frustrating about this, right? Because, I mean, Tillerman is obviously going in and he's trying to, I mean, he knows what he's doing, right? I mean, he went there with the idea, I'm going to record this conversation. I'm going to release it. I'm going to, either use it to expose Steny Hoyer or use it to my benefit as a last-ditch effort to win the primary, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, to raise money. And here's what I find really frustrating about this, is that instead of focusing on, why? Like, get to the reason why they support this guy, Crow, as opposed to that the process is such. Because let's for a moment just contemplate that this is Crow meeting at a bar with, Keith Ellison. And Keith Ellison says, look, we've put our support, the DCCC, behind Levi Tillerman. We did that early on. And we think you should get out of the race because we want him to win in the general election. And the reason why they had put their money behind Tillerman, it was because Tillerman was for Medicare for all and Crow wasn't. I mean, I don't think I'd be upset about this.
Right.
Right. I mean, this is what I want. And so you have this sort of obsession with the process, and it's not the process that people should have a complaint with. And I don't even think they do. I mean, we never hear people complain about how Martin O'Malley got a raw deal in the primary because we don't care about Martin O'Malley. We don't like his politics, but he was the first one to say that this was rigged. He was the one who introduced the words rigged by the DNC.
That's true. This is true.
And so this obsession with DCCC is, being, sort of like unfair. That's not the point. The point is the DCCC is driven by corporate money, and we want them out. I want the people who are not driven by corporate money in.
Right. No, I definitely can see that perspective. If you listen to that, as you listen to that clip, Steny Hoyer can't make the case because it almost seems as though he doesn't even know the candidate he's supporting, right? I know they had to edit it for time, but there's absolutely nothing there that he's saying substantive enough to justify his position and the DCCC's position. So it seems as though he's just there to bring the bad news, but doesn't even know the candidate. Right. And I think that underscores what you're saying in terms of they can't even make the case as to why, outside of the fact that maybe he's just the corporate pick.
Well, I think they probably could make that case, but I don't think that other candidate, Tillerman, went in with that agenda. I think he was just trying to go in and say this is unfair, as opposed to why are you supporting? I mean, because you started out by saying, look, the Democrats keep losing. They have, and part of the reason why they're losing is because they're supporting crappy candidates who support crappy policies. And okay,
so you're saying Tillerman missed a great opportunity to get even more than just unfairness.
I think this is the problem with the way that a lot of like people who are who you and I are simpatico to in terms of their politics. Honestly, they're going at like, you know, I have a problem with the process. No, you know what? I don't have a problem with the process. I have a problem with the process because it is producing shitty candidates, full of corporate money. And frankly, if it was Bernie Sanders meeting with Crow and saying, look, get out of the race. You know, I've turned over my email list to Tillerman, and he's going to raise a ton of money, and you're going to get better. So don't be a jerk. Get out. I would have no problem with that.
That's true. I guess that's fair across the board, because I don't think anyone would. I think every Bernie Sanders supporter would be on Bernie's side in that equation. So, okay, I can dig it.
I mean, I guess, you know, my feeling is just like people need to focus on power instead of like the politics, because, I mean, everything is corrupt in this way. Everything, you know, like, I got a buddy who works at the box office, and he saved me the better ticket. I mean, you know, everything works that way.
Yeah.
I don't know. Meanwhile, let's go on to another sort of like a thing that's happening on the left. And this Joy Reid situation. I, for a moment, let's put aside the sort of the divide as to where she is. I mean, I think like it has certainly from a just a pure power situation not helped her that she was so active on Twitter getting into battles with different people, because I think it's sort of but what do you make of this? I mean,
you know, there's so many different ways to look at this, right? So, I mean, Joy, I had shitty politics back around, before 2004 or whatever. I can't even tell you when I actually started converting in terms of some of my politics, particularly with the LGBTQ community. I come from the Black church, and so we're notoriously homophobic, right? And so I had to grow out of that. I'm not sure why Joy couldn't just do the mature thing and say, yeah, I did that, and it was crappy, and I apologize, and just leave it at that. So she really, it's one of those things where the scandal itself would not have been as bad as them trying to cover it up. She literally walked into a brick wall with this one. In terms of like the scale of it, I have to concur with what you said, right? I think it's been amplified not only by the fact that she tried to deny it, but by her Twitter presence. Like, she really gets into scorched earth arguments with people, and people are going to do what people do, right? You know, you hit a hornet's nest, you're going to get stung. And so people started the research. They exposed it alone. Like, this has been out for a little while on Joy Ann Reid. I think it's been maybe 4 or 5 months, maybe even 6 months. I can't remember when I first read it. But then Glenn Greenwald wrote about it, and it just took it to an entirely new level this week. So, you know.
Well, my understanding is my understanding of the TikTok is that it came out 4 or 5 months ago. She apologized for what was sort of, and we should just tell people she had a blog, and we're talking about, I guess, 10 years ago or so. She had a blog where she was writing stuff that was not like, it was definitely homophobic, but it wasn't like, God hates fags. It was more like, using homophobia as some type of leverage to mock people. And, you know, on this program, I used to have a closet door every time I would say Lindsey Graham's a name. Mm. But from my perspective, I was doing that because at that time, the Republican Party was actively using the demonization of gay people and marriage equality as an electoral tool. And I felt like, you know, you should not, if you're going to be a part of that party, you don't get a free pass. You know, if I see you out there, spewing anti-Semitism, and I show up at Shoal and you're sitting next to me, I'm going to blow the whistle on you. She apologized for those things. She said what you said. And then apparently there was a whole nother set from the same source that came out at the beginning of the week that Mediaite wrote about. And her response to that, and from what I understand, the timeline was that she had contacted the Wayback Machine. She had found these things, or maybe, and by the time they had gotten it out, they were already copied. And then it came out, and she clung to this story about being hacked.
So that's even worse, right? That's even worse. So this is just like more stuff coming out. You know, own it. Like, you've already gone through this one time. I do remember her apologizing the first time, but you know, own it. You wrote it. Just leave it there. But creating this entire, see, Glenn Greenwald's entire position is the reason this story is a big deal is because she's trying to claim that this database was hacked, right? And she's using that as a means of trying to get out of the story. And he continued to push that as a reason why people should care about this story. A big part of me, I'm going to admit, a big part of me was like, why do we care about right. this story, right? And then he kept pounding, this is why you should care about the story, until it took hold. And so, you know, all of this could have been avoided if she just had done what she did previously, which was to apologize. Like, I mean, listen, Jon Stewart, I think I mentioned it either on your show or Michael Brooks' show. Jon Stewart ran an entire clip talking about a transphobic segment. I'll just leave it at that.
Well, I remember what it was. I remember this. It's been going around where he was talking about
Dennis Kucinich.
He was mocking Kucinich for saying, and look, I have my own issues with the Kucinich, but Kucinich said back, I think this was in, you know, just like 15 years ago, maybe, I would have no problem appointing a gay or lesbian or a transgender judge. And Jon Stewart's response was like, I can see it now, you know, excuse me, Your Honor, chick with dick. And, right. I mean, the idea that somebody would make that joke and, you know, Jon Stewart was the hero of the left.
Of the left.
You cannot,
exactly.
I mean, that would just, he'd be driven off the air, if he did that today, and rightfully so. It is hard to understand why, and maybe it could just come down to like, she just couldn't even, you know, I mean, I'm sure I did stuff 15 years ago that if someone said to me, like, you said this, and I'd be like, that does not sound like me. I did not say that.
Sam, I'm pretty sure I laughed at that Jon Stewart segment, right? So we're all like, we are all works in progress in terms of the bigotry that, because I mean, the entire nation is moving as a body politic towards becoming less bigoted, and that's a good thing. That means that some of us have holdouts, some of us have issues that we wrote about back in the day. So I mean, it's not a huge deal in the sense that if she has grown, she's grown, but it's just ridiculous that she would take this childish approach to it. To say that the system was hacked, I mean that's really like the worst thing that you could say, because not only is it provable, you know, they could verify this, or but it's also just, you know, making a mountain out of a molehill when people honestly appreciate growth, right? They want to see that you're not the same person that you were 20 years ago, because pretty much everybody who was politically active 20 years ago, apparently except Dennis Kucinich, had some issues with their politics. So it's really just a crisis of our own making.
Yeah, I agree. And maybe we've even spent more time on it than it warrants. But I think it's just, I mean, it is, aside from, you know, my having some disagreements with her in terms of like where she is on the left political spectrum. I think, you know, her voice is, I just wish on MSNBC she was, you know, more positioned in the center because of where everybody else is. But the fact of the matter is on MSNBC, she's one of the few voices of color. And, you know, even she's one of the few Democrats left on there, to be quite frank. And
it's a bad time to be on MSNBC.
Tell me about it. But with that said, let's move on to the other big story. Ronnie Jackson here. I mean, I think people are well aware that the guy has now pulled his nomination. He was accused of not just handing out Ambien, and I can't remember the other one. Someone mocked me the other day for totally getting the drug wrong, the one that keeps you awake. But apparently there was other sort of like Percocets involved, and there was a lot of like a wide range of stuff. And there were car accidents, supposedly, from drinking. And here's the weird part about this whole story. What? How did this stuff not come out before?
Well, I mean, apparently a security clearance isn't enough to expose these type of things publicly. And he did not seek, quote unquote, a higher office or a position. The only reason I could see this coming out would be the fact that Donald Trump wanted to move him to a cabinet position without vetting him. So, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of things that go under the radar that just to protect the news cycle in some cases. The incident where he was banging on the woman's hotel room, the Secret Service had to get involved because they were afraid he was going to wake up President Obama. Apparently that was not, along with a couple of other incidents, were not reported in a fashion that they created a paper trail. So, you know, I mean, I guess without him going to a higher level, I mean,
doesn't the president's staffers go like, hey, this is a guy we probably don't want hanging around the president right now. Like, we should get a different guy in here.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess you have to say how frequent was. I mean, we really don't know because not a lot of things were documented. So, I mean, if he was that problematic, then the truth is President Obama does own, or at least his team owns some of that because he was there before Trump. So, but I really, on this story, I really look at the incompetence of Trump because we can always spin it to be all right about Trump, right? I'm about to do my spin job here. This is the incompetence of Trump because how do you continuously nominate people who are decidedly unqualified for the job, but then you don't even take a moment to pre-vet them before they're vetted formally, right? You didn't do the basic research because these are things that are rumors inside of the White House. In other words, he didn't even talk to the White House people about this, right? He didn't talk to former staff about this. He talked to no one because this would have come out had he just had a modicum of vetting.
But he wears a uniform.
Yeah. I mean, and even the informal way that he speaks of him, what they call him, Dr. Johnny or they call him in such a informal kind of presentation or way of referring to him. It kind of lends itself to the fact that this was the cool doctor or this was the guy that you can go get candy from. This is what, you know, this is how Donald Trump introduced him to the nation, or at least on that Fox and Friends interview, or Randy rather. So, you know, Donald Trump betrayed himself with this. So, you know, it really simply means that Donald Trump is not doing the most basic vetting before he introduced someone to be vetted by the entire nation. And that, I think that speaks to the overconfidence of Donald Trump. And that's been a trend throughout his entire life. He still thinks that he's above this type of vetting because that's all he had in his private life.
I trust my gut. And I just wanted to be more rock and roll in the White House.
It's his kind of guy, right?
All right. Well, let me ask you this. Okay. And are we not at the point now where it's like, if you agree to serve in the Trump administration, that is like primary evidence of your incompetence, right? Like just even agreeing to put yourself in this crap show, it, to me, is like the biggest argument that you are unqualified because you clearly have not been in enough scenarios in your life where you can sense like, this is not a place I want to be.
Yeah, they're really not doing some cost risk analysis here, because if you look at Pompeo, I think he's willing to take the risk for the reward that he could get, you know, his ideological reward, he can influence the State
He's also
Department.
A lunatic and and I would say Pompeo does not in any way contradict my thesis. He is horrible, and that's why he takes this job. But I mean, if you're a semi-competent or not driven by, you know, this is the thing, like Scott Pruitt, Chris Kobach, all of these guys, they all seem to be lack a fundamental competency.
They lack self-awareness also, right? If I had these things that like I know there's a threshold of stuff that I've done in my past of whether or not I should run for office, right? And you also know there's a threshold of things that are in your past whether or not you should accept a nomination. And it's the same calculus. And apparently this admiral is not self-aware enough to realize that he should have said no from the beginning. He should have been the one to say no.
Benjamin Dixon, before you go, I would like you to tell us two things that would keep you from assuming a position of public office that are in your background, your history.
Same things that are in everyone else's past. My past is pretty boring, so I'll put it like that. But also, hey, that's all I can say. You got me stuttering for real here. But listen, Sam.
You got to spend more time with your family. You got to spend more. You got to spend more time.
I'm as boring as you, Sam. I'm as boring as you. We're good.
You got to spend more time with your family. That's why you can't do it. You know. That's what you
exactly.
Said.
In 20 years, you're going to see a headline. Dixon is whatever. But anyway.
All right. Well, I'll look forward to that. Benjamin Dixon, people can check out Benjamin Dixon Show. It's all over the place. You can find it on, via Twitter, on YouTube. Ben, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate
it. Thanks for having me. Have a great weekend.
All right. You too. All right, folks. We're going to head to I'm going to call Judy. Listen. Speaking of family, I have an announcement. This is a little bit awkward for me because I don't generally, I guess I talk about things in my life on the show, but this is not WTF. Eventually, this stuff comes up and sometimes it's awkward. I don't know. Mostly I found it during like the commercial reads, for Casper, I got another Casper mattress. So we have two now. The reason why I got another Casper mattress, just of other things, is, and I also, longtime listeners of the show, have been aware of all milestones in my life. And so I want to share it. I don't want to, make a big deal of this, and everybody's doing fine, but I am separated from my wife, former wife, and this is a situation that has been the case really since the beginning of the year. Everybody's doing fine. Kids are fine. We are amicable, Nikki and I, So I just wanted to get that out there so that if I, start to reference it in some ways, someone noticed the other day that I don't have a wedding ring on and went back and saw the tapes where I was wearing a wedding ring. I just wanted that out there. I don't want it to be a topic of conversation so much on this show. I imagine it'll come up at times, but I don't, it's not necessary for everybody to send IMs or call in and say, I'm sorry, this and that. I just wanted to get it out there so that it wasn't something. The idea of talking about stuff that, I keep referring to the mattress thing, but talking about that and, it's uncomfortable because I like to be able to just express, reality as it is. And, I don't necessarily want to share everything in my life, but I want to be honest about stuff that I reference to. And so that's that. But, with that said, we're going to take a quick break and, we'll talk to Judy Gold and she will give me advice on being single.
Under the fog, 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 and I
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report.
Hold on.
Wait, do we have a...
Oh, my God. You try so hard to do everything right, and everything fucking sucks all the fucking time.
I don't know if we accidentally just got into, like, a conversation you're having. We don't have Judy's...
Level-headed.
Fuck you!
Calm, cool, and collected.
I have a bigger penis than him.
Judy Gold is on the line to keep us all connected.
What the fuck is the matter with them?
A steady hand to guide us. She'll keep us calm and carry on.
No fucking way!
Too bad Jimmy Reefer Cuck didn't find her worthy of a song. Well, Judy Gold.
And he's such a fucking penis head liar. I'm not kidding.
I can't tell if... we're listening to the song or Judy.
That's the president of the United States. That's the president. What the fuck? Like, this guy, he's...
Judy?
I can't believe it.
I can't tell if we're talking to you live or that's the song.
First of all, I can't believe I have children. It's just, I procreated. I just can't believe it.
What?
Wait, that shit.
Oh, like just like that you're allowed to, or what? I don't understand.
Yeah, I guess it's like, you know, my mother never spoke like that. It's just, I don't know. I guess feel sorry for my kids. Whatever. I'm honest.
How now? If your mom never spoke like that, how did you? Where did you pick this up?
I don't have any idea. I have no idea. I have no edit button. She used to just say, "Judith, you're so hyper. You're so hyper." And then she would tell me not to get my blood pressure up. Like, because I used to get so annoyed.
When you were a kid?
Political stuff, you know?
When you were a kid?
Yeah, anything that was unfair or, yeah, I'd get so pissed off. Judith, what are you going to get your blood pressure up? And then, you know, anything Jewish, they hate us. They hate us. They all hate us. Everyone hates us. They all hate us. They call you a dirty Jew. They hate us. That's, yeah. Yeah, that's how I grew up.
Well, that sounds like a lot.
It was fun.
A lot
it
of
was
fun.
I can't believe I'm a comedian. Yeah.
And speaking of being a comedian in very Jewy places, you were just back from Stockholm.
I was in Stockholm for a Jewish New York festival.
Wait, what is that?
Yeah, it was amazing. It's such a beautiful place, and. So Elisa, my girlfriend, was wearing, you know, she wears this little Star of David we got in Israel, Jew, and someone said to her, "Oh, you're very brave." So that was telling.
Mm-hmm. In Sweden?
In Sweden.
Wait, you're very brave to wear it?
To wear a little Jewish star around her neck, yeah.
Oh, jeez.
It's nice.
And so, wait, what is, will you explain to me what the Jewish New York Festival is in Stockholm?
Okay, so they did a symposium all day Sunday. It was Adam Gopnik and David Denby from The New Yorker, Jody Rosen, who's a music critic, just writes about music, Letty Cotton Pogrebin, who's a, you know, founder of Ms. Magazine, Annie Polland, who... is a Jewish historian, the rabbi from the 92nd Street Y, he's the head of the 90, you know, Peter Rubenstein. I mean, it was Jew from Jews. I mean,
it sounds very brave.
I went to synagogue. I went to services on Friday night and they checked my passport. We had to bring our passports and we got questioned.
What did you get questioned about?
There's so much security. Do you do this, you know, do you sell, you know, do you observe the, you know, the Sabbath when you're in New York and blah, blah, blah. And we're like, no, we're here just to, yeah. But, you know, they have to be really careful.
Wow. And
because as my mother said, they all hate us. Everyone hates us. They hate us.
And so did you perform stand up there or were you like on a panel? Just talking about being Jewish.
Yeah, it was about, you know, the influence. The panel I was on was the influence, you know, of Jews in theater, music, and comedy. And then I did do 15 minutes of stand-up. I made them laugh. I couldn't believe it.
And who's in the audience? Like, people who are just like wanting to, is the idea to sort of like make Judaism
there's only 18,000 Jews. Yeah, make Judaism great again. There's only 18,000 Jews in Sweden. So I think there's a small Jewish population. There were 26 people at the services, for synagogue. And I just think it's just to not forget, you gotta educate people. So, and a lot, over 400 people came. It was amazing. I learned a lot too about, the immigration. A lot of it had to do with immigration, which is not a big issue right now.
Yeah, right. 15,000 mm-hmm. Jews in a country of 18,000 Jews in a country of what is it? Almost 10 million people, right?
Yeah, in Sweden? And 10,000 in Stockholm. 10,000 of the 18,000 are in Stockholm.
Wow, that's like the number in that's not a lot. That's a small population.
No, tiny, but you have to keep the history alive. And then every time there was a siren, the sirens go, we were like, oh my God, they're coming to get the Jews. So it was fun.
What my understanding is that a huge amount of acts of anti-Semitism. I just saw a statistic that said most of it's right wing hatred, and I don't. Mm-hmm. I imagine that's what's going on in Sweden too. It's right. Just fascist.
Right. It's in the southern part. They say most of it, southern part of Sweden.
And did you guys go down there or no?
No, absolutely not.
And so how
we
long
went to museums and ate, and it was amazing. It's a beautiful city.
How long were you there for?
We were there for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, 5 days.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like fun.
You just traveling is key. You travel around the world. You learn so much about other cultures and, It's really interesting. You appreciate America, but you also see the way other people live, and it is very informative, I have to say. And we think we're the greatest. And yet there's no guns there. There were no guns at all. Hardly anyone smokes. The food is phenomenal. There's no marijuana. That was the one bad thing. There's no pot there at all.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, very illegal.
I like how synchronized that was.
Wow.
Really, man? Yeah. Whoa, that's Sweden's not cool.
Yeah.
Forget that.
Yeah.
Let's head to Amsterdam.
But Amsterdam.
Now, did they have a Jewish talk show host type of figure?
They had a moderator for each panel. Not all were Jewish.
What?
The one I had was an eight. Yes.
Why didn't they have? Question? They should be bringing in Jewish moderators, like someone like who's like a host.
No, they
like
did.
That.
They did. Ilan Warshaw, who did the movie.
Who?
That's his name, Ilan Warshaw. He did a movie called Wagner's Jews.
Oh gosh.
About Wagner, the composer, and the Jews that he associated with. Anyway, so he was the.
But Judy, my point is,
he was the moderator.
Why not bring in a Jewish New York talk show host?
They're going to do it again next year. I could. You should do it, Sam.
That's what I was looking for.
Do you see that
Judy?
Ringing endorsement in her voice?
Someone
she
gets
sounded
a hint.
So excited.
What
about
do I
it?
Have to do? I have to go over.
You really want to go, even if there's no weed, dude?
I have to. Hang whitefish off of me and walk over and knock on your house.
Oh my God! Can I tell you? Every meal they have salmon and herring. I was in heaven. But, yeah, you would love it. It was really informative. And do you know how they count it when the Jews came over to Ellis Island? Every time I say the word Jew, I just know the Twitter, they just tweet at me. Oh, are you a Jew? Jew, Jew, Jew. So cut the anti-Semitism today. Anyway.
Are you?
But do you know how they counted the amount of Jews when they came to America on the Lower East Side? from Ellis Island because a lot of them didn't belong to synagogues and stuff. So the census of Jews, they counted how many people, how much matzah each family needed, and that's how they counted the census for
Are
Passover.
Are you serious?
What?
Yes.
That's
yes.
a joke.
Wait, what do you mean by that?
Mm-hmm.
Wait. What do you okay. mean by that? I don't
when
understand.
When the Jews came... All right, listen, you son of a bitch. When the Jews came over in the 1800s from Ellis Island, right?
Yes, that's where my family came through.
Yes.
Late 1800s.
They settled in the lower part of Manhattan.
Correct.
Now, a bunch of them, you know, they weren't affiliated with a synagogue, and they wanted to know how the census, how they knew how many Jews were in New York at the time, was how much matzah they had signed up for. They needed to get matzah. They would deliver matzah for Passover.
Hmm. Okay, that's...
Yes.
Trump should reinstitute that.
Right.
Yeah.
How to keep track.
It's the only way
so,
to get a
the only way
yeah.
to know.
He's so great.
How many yarmulkes?
Yeah, there you go. Go.
Hold on. One of my other 16 phones is ringing. Hold on.
She has multiple phones, ladies and
gentlemen.
Okay,
sorry.
This is what happens.
That was a Michael Cohen
overseas.
Joke. It was a Michael Cohen joke.
Oh, yeah. Michael Cohen has what? Like 10?
16 phones.
16.
I got my cab scam phones. I got my Ukrainian mafia phones. I've got my favors to porn stars that Trump doesn't
How
know
does
about
somebody
phones.
Justify that?
Having 16 phones?
Yeah.
You'd have to go hang out with him on his favorite park bench in Midtown, dude.
Honestly.
Oh, my God.
Is that not like indicative of...
A certain practices, I would say.
Yeah.
Some of them are Blackberries, too.
You know he has, like, one of those sticky labels on each one, you know? One says David Dennison, you know, it's just, yeah.
That's, I wonder if, like, I have old phones sitting in my, like, drawer. Like, I have, like, iPhone 1, I still have that one.
This is
in
good.
The drawer.
This is good for the pitch for next year in Sweden.
But that's
I keep good. All
you know,
my old
can...
phones.
You know, you never know. You got to keep your passports and your separate phones because.
Actually, Judy, could you do me a favor, Judy? Could you tee off on Sean Hannity, please? Because I think he's the worst person on the planet.
Oh, he's such a fucking scumbag. What the fuck is wrong with him? Seriously. He's so full of shit, and you know he's not even right wing. He's just fucking doing it to. I hate him. I fucking hate him.
But the foreclosures, too, right?
They're just all scum. They're just liars. And I can't believe that he calls a fucking radio show. And for a half... First of all, they were trying to get him off the show. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah. Did you guys...
I played that yesterday.
Did you play all of it yesterday?
Played about 7 minutes to the point where, like, Kilmeade's basically, like, even Kilmeade, who is, like... borderline not sentient. Like, yeah, well, Mr. President,
right.
Maybe you should calm down.
Don't let him
get
to you.
Yeah,
don't worry about
him. We have a cooking segment. He's such a fucking idiot. I can't believe that he... I don't understand how he has the fucking time to get up and sit on a fucking radio show for a half an hour and just spew bullshit. And fucking Hannity's an asshole liar. Oh, my God. How is this continuing on? And now this stupid report that's full of shit about the no colluding. I mean, I just don't. How does this go on and on and on? And in Sweden, by the way, I didn't know if I mentioned I was in Sweden last week. You know, they hate him.
I would imagine.
Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, do you know this Diamond and Silk? Do you know who they are?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm.
All right, what is the deal with this? I don't understand. Are they were they a comedy team or a musician, a minstrel show, music team? They a band?
Who are they?
Are they DJs?
Are they sisters?
They're like meme vloggers.
No, they're vloggers.
Right.
Yeah, they're vloggers.
Okay, so
and they go and they sit there and they talk about, you know, how much they love Donald Trump and, you know, and the one is always like, mm-hmm, that's right. You know, it's just this.
Right. It's sort of like how you are when Judy's on. You're like, mm-hmm.
I want to play.
That's right, Judy.
All right, because we just, apparently back in last summer, they did an ad for Paul Neelan, who is
a white supremacist. Yeah,
he's a Nazi. Mm-hmm. A confirmed
Nazi.
Yes,
and the guy now, he's still in. Is he running?
He's running.
He's running.
Still running.
He's
right,
Paul Ryan.
Paul Ryan's dropped out.
That's right.
So he's going to end up, and it's either Nealon or maybe another Republican who are going to go up against probably Randy Brice, who is the most well-known Democrat. But here is the ad that they did for this guy who is an avowed Nazi. And it's Diamond and Silk. And I didn't realize they were vloggers. I wasn't aware of them until like all this like hubbub that they somehow are being censored by Facebook, they claim. Dave Rubin should have them on.
I'm shocked he hasn't.
All right, but
your president has retweeted them. Okay, go ahead.
Here is the ad.
Hey y'all, it's Diamond and Silk. Paul Ryan, a.k.a. Lion Ryan, cripple the American people and the middle class by shipping our jobs overseas. Jobs like GM, Chrysler, and Oscar Mayer Wiener.
What? Oscar?
What a loser. We want a winner like the businessman Paul Nealon, who worked in manufacturing and earned an MBA.
Uh-huh.
Nealon puts the American workers first. Vote for Paul Nealon August 9th.
Yeah.
Remember, this is an open primary, so Democrats, you can vote too. Go to paulnealon.com to make a donation.
This ad is paid for by volunteers from Paul Nealon.
So, Sam, the one that holds up the Oscar Mayer wiener goes, that's you.
That's me?
Yeah, right.
That's,
with Judy. Yeah. Yes. Judy's
you're
Judy's
the hype man.
Oh, yeah.
You're the one. You're the hype man.
I just don't understand. Like, it's just pure money. You only get paid $7,000 for that.
Yeah, $7,000. Yeah. Well,
I feel like
there's $7,000 that wasn't there.
I wouldn't do an Nazi endorsement for less than $10,000. That's what I feel like.
Yeah.
I feel like they said, like, that stuff they say about him being a Nazi. The Nazis were in World War II. What do you think were like? Like the Living Dead or something, and then they're like, fine, $7,000 for 30 seconds. I'll take it.
There is that guy, who do we speak to, that said, like, I can't remember the story recently where someone was accused of being a neo-Nazi, and they said, I am actually a real Nazi.
Right.
Not neo.
I would like to do the Germany style, like the Jews being like, Adolf Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
Adolf Hitler, American leader.
He's going to rebuild the Autobahn. What?
He's creating jobs. it's so, people are so uninformed and stupid and
Was it
he didn't even mention, all right, go ahead, go.
Well, was it nice to get out of town for 5 days and miss the news cycle?
Oh my God, and then not hear about him. I didn't hear about him. That was the greatest part. It's not like you turn on the TV and it's like lie, Trump, bullshit. And it was really good. I went to museums. You got to get away. You have to cleanse yourself. I'm not kidding. It's very important because he can take over your fucking life, you know?
Really? Did Swedes come up to you and just say, like, how can you explain yourself? Can you please tell us, like, what the deal is?
I would kind of, you know, order my food and then be like, I hate him, by the way. You know, it was like, can I get those well done? I hate Trump. That was sort of how
you preempt it.
Yeah. Right. So like when I'm checking in the hotel and you do a little small talk like, oh, yeah, OK, that sounds great. I hate Trump. You know, you just try to add it into every conversation so that everyone knows you fucking hate him.
Now, are you
so embarrassing?
Are you in the New York Jewish festival, syndicate or tour now? Like, because who's the caboose?
I got into a Jewish film
festival, you know, years ago, and then I ended up going to like 5 Jewish film festivals.
Yeah, it's good. Let me tell you something. The Jews like culture, right? And then once you get in with them, they like to use you it's good, and they pay well.
Yeah, you gotta say like, oh, you're probably gonna want like a Jewish moderator.
Right. Then you gotta get me a voiceover on that Bob's Big Burger bullshit. Okay?
She's
I am shocked that you haven't done one. I'm definitely gonna...
I know. And I do a lot of voice. I do a lot of voices, Sam. Sam, I'm very upset about the marriage, but we'll talk about that another time.
Well, I appreciate that. Yes, I know. Mm-hmm. I know you're upset.
But there's a lot of ladies that are going to be running after you.
Thank you, Judy. I appreciate that.
Yes, I just want to let you know that. Okay.
Judy has now alerted the sisterhood at all the local synagogues.
Yes.
I would imagine.
I'm going to make a shidduch.
You hadn't already done that?
You're going to take a what?
I'm going to make a shidduch.
What is that? What is that? A shidduch.
You don't know what a shidduch is?
I don't.
You get Jesus Christ.
I didn't know. Did you know that, Michael?
No. Yeah. No.
Okay.
It sounded like what I thought it sounded like.
It's a shidduch. It's when someone fixes you up with another J.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well,
I think you'd love it. I mean, I'm going to tell her. Listen, what's going to happen? Because I can't deal with him and being in office for much longer. I'm not kidding. It can't be 4 years.
Don't worry about it, Judy. Just try to set Sam up. It'll be fine.
Just relax, Judy.
Just relax. Just,
right.
Have another piece of fish that you brought back.
Go to
Sweden. Did you bring back any smoked fish from Sweden?
Ooh.
You can't bring anything back.
What about like those little Swedish fish, like the candies?
Oh, yeah, that's funny. I had the Swedish meatballs there. They're so good.
Better than IKEA?
Oh, my God. Beyond. And lingonberry. Do they have the lingonberries at the ones in IKEA?
I have no idea.
I don't even know what those things are.
They're like little red berries. So good.
Wow. Did you see
the... I'm telling you, the food is so fucking good. Yeah, go ahead.
Did you see the video of the woman from the Port Authority chewing out the cops in Tenafly?
Mm-mm.
Do you want to hear this?
I feel so weird about this video.
What did she do?
Why do you feel weird about it?
Well, it's just such an unambiguously pro-cop video. I mean, this woman is so obnoxious.
But you know, I'll tell you what's amazing about this video. I want you to, we're going to watch this video.
Right?
Exactly. Watch this video. Imagine that this woman is
Diamond
a black woman. Or, you know. So the video is a dash cam footage of two cops who have pulled over.
Yes! I saw that. Yeah.
Do you want to see it again?
We're going to play.
Over the daughter?
Yeah. We're going to play some of it. Yeah. I want to get your insight as someone who grew up probably next door to this lady. What's going
God.
On? I mean, but just for a moment, also imagine that this woman is a black woman and just like how long it would take until she was tased and cuffed, if not actually guns drawn. But here it is. The mom shows up. Apparently, she gets the call, and she comes up to the cops, and here's this.
Hi, I'm Karen Turner.
Hi.
It's Nina. I'm a resident. There you go.
It's fine. I don't need that.
Okay, fine. I'm Karen
Turner. You're just here as the rider, right?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I'm here as a concerned citizen and friend of the mayor and been in Tenafly for 20 years. I take full responsibility for them. And what is the reason they were pulled over?
The driver has all the information. He'll tell you.
No. I need to know.
No, you don't need to know.
Okay.
We're not involved here. You're picking them
up.
No.
I'm involved. Trust me.
Well,
I'm very
not going
involved.
To tell you. He's the driver of the automobile. He's over 18. That's all you need to know.
Okay. If you can...
We don't need to see credentials.
Okay.
We've explained already.
You need a...
Pause it. All I can remember, Judy, is... going with my grandmother in Newton, Massachusetts, like 25 years ago, we're driving up to they had a takeout window at the bank or whatever. And the first thing my grandmother says to the woman at the bank is, "I'm a depositor." This gets you special, like special, yeah. And then, like the person at the bank was just like, yeah, no shit. Why else would you be here?
Yeah.
All right, so let's listen. She continues.
If you can give me a little bit of space here.
I need some privacy.
Are you a commissioner?
I am a commissioner. One of the commissioners, and I'm heading up.
Do you have an ID with that?
That is my ID, and that is my business card. I am the commissioner of the Port Authority, and I'm heading up over 4,000 police officers.
Okay? So, if there's a problem, I think I have...
There's no problem.
Well...
Okay.
Oh, then things escalate a little bit.
And then apparently there was a follow-up to this. We're going
to
skip over.
You didn't even get to the point where she tells them how
we're going to skip to that. We're going to that right now. Here it is.
Do that.
I think it's the best thing at this point.
You know what? I'm very disappointed in the way the two of you are acting. You cannot even tell me, a mother living in Tenafly for 20 years with two kids who went through the school system, what the problem is. And that's shocking. It's shocking that you can't even give me a sentence.
I think
no.
we should conclude
so
this.
I will.
Just for safety
absolutely.
Reasons, this is a high-speed road. I think we should all get off of the road.
You
a little bit dangerous for
I'm
us being
so
out here
sorry.
As long as we were
Thank
anyway.
Thank you for your concern with my safety.
Okay.
I don't need it. You can't put a sentence together? Sorry.
Okay.
That's pathetic.
Okay.
And you are a disappointment. And you are just following him. So you are also a disappointment.
Okay.
You can't put together a sentence of what the
are
problem is.
Now?
Pause
are
it. Judy, I know you've seen this, but do you think that she's picking on the short guy by saying, like, you're just his little sidekick?
Yeah, you know, she's so like a school marm. You know, you people! You don't understand. You're an idiot. It's just, and they're just like, okay, fuck you. I mean, it's seriously.
Well, here she goes. She's
so,
getting frustrated because she
yeah.
can't. She's like, I'm disappointed in you. And then she turns to the guy, who,
yeah.
the shorter cop, as if like, you know, you're just his sidekick.
Well, this is so stupid because
yeah,
even
why
if,
couldn't you grow?
Well, she has no. Well, she's leaving him like, I mean. Now, even if there was any division between the two of them, like she, now he has absolutely no choice.
Right. Yeah. Right.
But
right.
That.
Here she
what
is.
The
are
problem
you finished
is?
Now? Are you finished, ma'am?
I'm shocked.
Are
I'm
you
shocked and very disappointed.
You, you,
thank
you,
you for your help.
Them. You may take them now.
You may not tell me when to take my child. You may shut the f*** up and not tell me when I may take my kids. And her friends,
okay.
who are PhD students from MIT and Yale.
Okay.
You may tell me
PhD
nothing,
students. MIT and Yale.
I wish they tasted
me.
It.
I will be talking to the chief of police.
Please.
And I will be speaking to the mayor.
Badge number 540.
That's awesome.
I got your name.
Just to make sure there's no discrepancy.
I know it's a four, there's no
Matt is the first
no.
name.
And now he's just tooling on her.
As long as you got all the information right.
I got all your information,
okay.
sweetheart. You can't put a sentence together. That's shameful.
Okay.
It kind of is. I don't
have
get that.
Have a pleasant weekend.
You have a wonderful weekend.
Where's this? He's speaking perfectly clearly.
Well, the sentence she...
I know! I don't know what the fuck she's talking about!
She's just saying she
and
wouldn't tell him
like,
what the deal was.
Right, and what about how he's like, okay, all right, that's great. Okay, all right, terrific. All right, bye-bye.
Some farm-to-table jersey.
And then
Shade.
She shows up apparently at the Tenafly Police Department. There's footage of that, but there's no audio. But she's there pacing around in the lobby of the Tenafly Police Department. And obviously, subsequently, she has to resign from the Port Authority. So she is now a former commissioner of the Port Authority.
So she's totally obnoxious, and that's great. And her behavior there was despicable and entitled. But, I mean, if we want to, like, underline the contrast, let's remember. I mean, we don't have the video. We don't need to play it. But, I mean, Sandra Bland essentially ended up dying. She got arrested for basically arching her eyebrow at a guy for unnecessarily
right.
pulling her over.
Yeah, it's abhorrent. The way African-Americans are treated, it is abhorrent and it's horrible. It's fucking horrible. I can't take it. It's really, ugh. Sorry.
I mean, that contrast
is Did you see the story?
Stunning.
There was a story in New York, somewhere in New York State, where five black women were playing golf. And the racist owner of, not the owner, but like the, it sounds like the father-in-law, basically called the cops on them, claiming that they were golfing at too slow a pace, even though it turns out that they were not. Like they had skipped the second hole because they got chastised after the first hole. And then they had to wait on the third hole for the people in front of them. And if you've got to wait, you're not playing at too slow a pace. The people ahead of you, maybe, but not you. And then they called the cops on them. The cops showed up.
And what happened?
Well, the cops showed up and they listened to it and they said, this is not something you call the cops for.
So this was the case of cops being like, you people are racist who are wasting our time.
It was, you know, right. When the cops are the voice of reason in these situations at the golf club, then you know you got a problem.
He's like, look, I personally have six bodies in my own account of innocent black people I've killed, sir, but this is ridiculous.
To the credit of the owner of the golf club, they basically said, we are going to go deep into, evaluating what's going on with our club.
Dad isn't allowed here anymore.
I think it was really like, finally, honestly, you really got the sense of like that somebody was like, thank God I'm going to be able to get my father-in-law the fuck away from this club for the first time in 25 years. Because now he's really done it. Now he's really done it.
Fucking asshole.
But just imagine, like you know, and this is what is just so devastating about this. Like, just imagine being one of those women. We went out to play golf and we get harassed for no fucking reason. There's no way for you to go through life not assuming that every time you get slighted, it doesn't have something to do with your race. And certainly,
absolutely,
everybody gets slighted to some extent, but you don't have any reason to believe it's other than like, oh, that guy's a jerk, as opposed to it's because of my skin color. And
what about the Starbucks? I mean, what about Starbucks? You know, my son Henry, his best friend is black, right? He goes to Indiana University when DeAndre, so Henry will drive to the airport to pick people up, you know? When DeAndre goes to the airport, it takes an extra hour because he can't drive through one of the towns because he's afraid, you know, he's going to get pulled over for doing. I mean, it's just, it's awful to live like that in the fucking United States of America. And don't think your fucking president
His attorney general is specifically saying to police departments, we're not going to investigate this sort of thing.
Right.
Explicitly.
Right, right.
Literally, the cuffs are, the shackles are off. All right, let's listen. We got some footage of Rush Limbaugh.
Please don't let it be footage. Maybe just sound, hopefully.
Sound.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And it's interesting because he is doing a very graphic version of what he thinks the P tape includes. And it leads me to believe that he thinks it's going to come out so that he can get out. I mean, this is the classic Rush Limbaugh thing where it's like he knows information. He pretends like he's predicting it. Like years, you would say stuff like the Republican Party is going to do this. Believe me, I can tell these things. And, you know, of course, the guy's the intellectual pillar of the Republican Party for years. And so I'm sure they had told him. But here he is running some flack on the P tape. Let's listen to Rush Limbaugh now.
And she wanted to know. Talked about this yesterday. Do you remember when I said to you yesterday, I said, get ready, folks. Somebody is going to produce a tape of prostitutes peeing on a bed. It's going to look like security camera footage from a hotel room. Totally. It may be in black and white. And we're going to be told that this may well be it. This may well be the it. This may well be Trump and hiring the prostitutes to pee on the bed. That bed right there, that might be the one Obama and Michelle slept in that the prostitutes are peeing on. Well, what's to stop them from doing that? They haven't stopped faking and making up. What do you think the Steele dossier is? It's fake, made-up evidence. It isn't evidence. It's fake, made-up allegations. And it is the center of all of this.
There you go. Does he get graphic into the thing? No, I guess.
I thought that was graphic. I think anything involving Trump and nudity is graphic.
New Yorker article about, what's his name, who did the dossier?
Steele.
Hello?
Steele.
Hello?
Hello, can you hear us?
Yes.
I read it. Yeah. It was interesting.
Interesting. He's not a liar. He's not a liar, the guy.
Well, I think I think he, you know, he was just compiling a story that he heard. It may or may not be true, but I don't think he was lying. I don't think he had any real.
No. He said it was 50-50.
Yeah.
And he has real sources, and he's and right. including, by the way, from like things that, you know, we might be and I am very critical of in terms of like, you know, clients and, you know, certain questionable industries and intelligence work, which, you know, whatever. But he's a totally mm-hmm. credible, non-crazy person who absolutely is basing this off of like, you know, sound conjecture, which is like what all intelligence right. work is.
You know what I find interesting? I find interesting this whole, you know, these diaries that these men keep of like, I just had a conversation with blank and we discussed blank. You know, like, it seems like such an odd thing to do. You know? Like, his notes corroborate this. And it's, do you do that?
You know, I don't do that, but I did remember, like, I think this is something that people like this do on a regular basis. I mean, I remember I was in a position as a student government president at my university or college. I don't want to brag.
And you can't even put a sentence together.
And I was giving, mm-hmm. I had my notes, and the president of the college was there, and he saw my notes, and he said, you don't write out your speech. And I said, no, I have bullet points. And then somehow we were talking, he's like, do you keep a journal? And I said, no. And he goes, you should, when you do stuff like this, you should just go back and write it. And even like, you know, when I have conversations, he said specifically to me.
Is it legal or memoir planning?
No, he was just saying like, you should just keep a record. And this is something that people do, I think, broadly speaking. I think police officers, prosecutors do this all the time.
Yes.
They create a paper trail, and smart people in like corporations also create a paper trail. They'll do it with email now. They will right. send right. an email to everybody like, hey, I just met with everybody. Just wanted to let you know. Here's my notes.
Yep.
Just as a way of playing it safe. So it's just like, you know, people in Hollywood don't do that. In show business, you don't do that. My God, you don't want there to be any evidence whatsoever.
Right. Right. But it's an interesting thing because it seems like, you know, it seems so antiquated. I'm going to keep a journal and write down my notes. And yet, thank God for these guys that did this.
How funny would it be if
I guess so, but I don't think it's going to lead to anything. That's the thing, is that I think this is all well and good with Comey, but I just don't think that it's going to lead to anything materially. I'm not saying that they're not going to find anything. It's just that, like, this is a political process. The Republican Party is not going right. to impeach Donald Trump. And if the Democrats somehow were to take the House and the Senate, I still think it's mm-hmm. unlikely that we would see impeachment before the 2020 elections.
Okay, well, what I don't understand, they know he's a fucking asshole. Like, they know what a scumbag liar and how destructive he is, and they just don't fucking care.
They are,
like,
too.
Like, remember when people went into, like, they'd run for office because they wanted to be public servants? I mean, what the fuck is going on?
It's a shit show.
It is.
Everything you just
Welcome
said.
Welcome to the shit show, yeah.
Wouldn't it be funny if there, imagine the Obama dossier, he had like a pea party in Accra on George Bush's bed. I need to get a bunch of Ghanaian hookers and piss on that devil's bed.
It's hilarious.
Gonna visit the Gold Coast, get the fuck out of here, devil.
Judy, I'm so glad you're back in the country and that you had the
opportunity. Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. It's so proud. So proud to be.
Well,
yeah.
We should get together and talk about the various Jewish festivals, the Shukat, New York Jewish festivals that we're going to be going to.
Shidduch.
The Shidduch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you?
I
can only imagine.
You need to, you know, sow your oats.
Well, thank you, Judy. That's very sweet.
Oh, my God. Now she just totally James Earl Jones from Coming to America, you. I love that.
I don't even know what that means, but I appreciate that.
Never saw
that.
Coming to America?
Yeah, no worries.
I haven't seen it in a long time. But I, yes. Well, thank you, Judy.
Yes.
You know,
please, can you do something to get him? I can't even look at him. And I can't. She hates him too. Like, she fucking hates his guts. Like, he's gross. I hate him. All right. That's it.
Hang in there.
I hate him. I just. Yeah,
I think maybe
I
we could send you out of the country for like a week at a time.
It's
for
continuing.
What?
Let me be it's your spiritual to. Practice, Judy.
And I don't understand. Like, how does Macron like him? Like, how does he like him?
Macron's also a fucking asshole.
Well, I think Macron doesn't like him. Yeah, but I mean, putting Macron aside as to like, you know, what kind of a person he is. I think that Macron is playing a role, and you don't get to be president of any country without being able to play a game like
that. That is totally true. But dude, he is totally Trump's Blair. Like, I mean, I agree.
Beyond.
Yeah. I mean,
what about how he wipes his dandruff off? His fucking. I mean,
he needs it to be perfect.
You gotta look your best. And you're great. You're great. That
you're
is
great.
Super
you're
disturbing. Did we pull that? Did we pull that sassy Trump?
Oh, we should play it.
All right, let's play this for you, Judy, yeah. And then you go. Are you familiar with sassy Trump?
No, but yeah, no, I'm not actually.
Are you don't know sassy Trump is?
This will help you.
No.
Oh, Judy, do yourself a favor.
Okay.
And it's okay. It's what's his face.
Peter Serafinowicz.
Peter Serafinowicz. He's a British guy. And Google sassy Trump, and then, you know, you'll come up for air probably, I would say, in like 3 or 4 days, and you're going to feel much better. But this is what he does, although he seems to have added one or two lines here.
In this one, he took
atypical.
Some liberties.
He took a little
here,
liberties.
Yeah.
But basically what he does is just re-records Trump's voice. In a very fey sounding voice, and
I love it. Okay.
It works perfectly.
Are you ready? Here it is. We're gonna. Yeah. This is all like a Macron montage.
Okay. Saying what a great relationship we have. That little piece of dandruff off.
Oh.
It'll be. You have to make it perfect. He is perfect. Emmanuel. Mwah. Mwah. Is my kiss all right? Totally up to Nick. I like him a lot. Let me give you my face. How's my face?
Oh my God.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
And it's an honor to call you my friend. Thank you. Do you love me?
Thank you
everybody, thank you.
Oh, Judy, go right now.
No, that's hilarious. I'm doing that. That's my afternoon delight.
Please.
Okay.
When we get off the phone right now, I want you to Google sassy Trump. You are going to love it. It's going to make you feel so much better. It really is.
Thank
it's like
you.
Stealing a
Appreciate
pencil from
it.
Work. All right, Judy. Always a pleasure. Thanks so
always.
Much for coming on.
Love
let's,
you guys.
Let's get some coffee soon.
Love you back.
All right. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom. Judy Gold, ladies and gentlemen. Judy Gold. Apparently, she's Jewish.
Oh, my God. The one I also have to say, the one they did with the Hannity Michael Cohen interview is just. The Hannity voice he has.
Oh, yeah.
He's just like, Michael, let me ask you. And then Michael Cohen, of course, is like, yeah, you know, Sean, it's disrupted my business.
All right. We have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song. Is that not correct, Matt?
We do.
And the title of that song is?
Country is Broken.
Country is Broken. I think that sounds accurate to me.
The country is broken. And the reason for that is simpler than you might think. And then when you solve that problem, many more problems can be solved, eventually leading to world peace. Country was broken since the Prohibition. And Slinger spoke in his lying words. William Hearst aided him in the mission. This prohibition has fucked up the world. Yes, prohibition has fucked up the world when it could have been such a much nicer place. They like to build walls to keep folks from getting in. They dropped herbicide on Mexican crops. Brainwash the masses with reefer madness. As slow as molasses, this madness must stop. Yes, it's gonna stop. We're gonna put an end to it, and then good things are gonna happen, man. Good things are gonna happen. Country is broken. This is not a warning. Trumpy has spoken like a fat turd. The idiots listen, 'cause they like his story. And neoliberals just bitching and acting absurd. Yes! And then last night, I see North Korea and the friggin' South Koreans, they're out there planting a fucking tree together, man. Planting a tree.
Well, I don't have my soundboard, but bravo. Bravo. That, of course, is a based on Cat Stevens' Morning Has Broken. Which also occurs to me sounds a lot like Puff the Magic Dragon. There it is. And that is The Country is Broken by Jimmy Reefer Cake.
It's a return to form.
Return to form, and not a moment too late. There we have it, folks.
Could that have been his 420 song that he sent a week late, maybe?
Yeah, he didn't even seem to like even acknowledge 420 whatsoever.
Yeah, just blew right by, because that was no more 420 than he usually is.
Now, to be fair, I will say this, like, I know that I was always skeptical of like things like New Year's, because I was like, this is amateur hour, right? Like, I don't want to go out, like, you know, this is when people don't know what they're doing, go out and get drunk, right, and then, like, you right. know, end up throwing all over themselves or picking a fight. And maybe for Jimmy Reefer Cake, 420 is just sort of like a cheap commercialization.
Yeah, that's normie ganja head nonsense.
It could be. All right. Well, folks, just a reminder, this program relies on your membership to continue to produce it every day. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. And when you do, we give you extra content every day. Some days it's 45 minutes. Other days it's 90 minutes of extra content. Content that sometimes maybe you don't want to hear the free half of the show. I'm just going to skip right to the fun half, where they start to make fun of people and things and stuff like that and whatnot. So
cackle,
etc. You can support the show by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Check it out. And again, if you want the fun half, but you do not have the financial means, we will never turn you away. Send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We will take care of you. You have 3 days left to order 30% discounted coffee at justcoffee.coop. Don't make the mistake of letting April pass you by. This is an opportunity for you to try a bunch of different coffees. So you buy 5 or 10, you figure out the 2, let's say, that you love the most, and then you get those at a 10% discount for the rest of the year, and you never have a bag of coffee that you're like, hey, I don't like this roast, or I like it. I found out that I like it from Ethiopia as opposed to Nicaragua, or I like Mexican coffee, or whatever it is. So you only have 3 days left. It's probably the last time I'm going to be able to mention it, right? Because Monday's 28th, 29th, one more day, Monday, I guess. So check it out. Also, TMBS, Corey Pine was in studio. You can listen to the Michael Brooks show on...
H-Bomber Guy as well.
And H-Bomber Guy.
For the YouTube audience, they love him.
They love him on the YouTube audience. Check him out on the YouTube channel at youtube.com/Sam Cedar, or which our Majority Report channel, or on iTunes. And as always, check out Jamie's podcast, patreon.com/antifada. And quick break, head into the fun half, 646-257-3920.